Welcome to the Mindcore Podcast, your favorite venue on the internet where brains mean more than pretty much anything. If you are smart, well-read, intellectual, yet you have a strong rebellious streak, you are anti-society, hyper-indulgent, and self-important, you are at the right place.
And if you listen to all of that, if you're willing to listen to that entire description, you're at the right place.
You got a pompous ass.
So here you are in good company with Reverend Grimes.
How you doing?
Enrique Requero and Diana Sparks.
A pompous ass.
And since we're going to be talking about women in science fiction, comics, horror, we're going to start out with a song to get you nice in the mood. A song about getting your ass beat by a beautiful woman. Venus in Furs, covered by Devotchka, originally by the Velvet Underground.
Costumes that she would wear, the mountains adorned imperiously in separate. Shiny leather in the dark. Don't look
Okay, well, so today what we're going to be talking about is we're going to talk about how women are portrayed in basically in all the pop culture stuff we're into, which is one of the reasons why we have our pop culture expert, Reverend Grimes, on today. We're going to be talking about how women are portrayed. We're going to start off, I guess, with science fiction, comics, and horror movies. Sound good?
Yay.
Okay, so let's start off with...
Just pick one.
Bad examples. Bad examples of how women are portrayed in science fiction.
Horror and comic books? The entire thing? The entire broad category?
Well, we should all try to pick one example. You go first, Diana, since you're about to pass out.
The way that women, female characters were written in comic books traditionally. Very flat, very ditzy, very... their exploits are driven by coincidence and happenstance and happy accidents. It's very obnoxious.
See, it just makes me sad to hear you say all that, but you're right up till a certain point.
It ended. It didn't end. It kind of morphed.
Well, it kind of morphed, but there's, you know, I think now what you're looking at is you're looking at bad, lazy writing.
Exceptions. I'm sure there's exceptions in every era of comic bookdom ever, and that's awesome. But like, kind of the mainstream, you know, shit that's out there is like that.
Well, even now, you would say.
Now it's all the chicks are super freaky sexy, and they have that weird anatomy that's like way super fit with gigantic fucking tits.
Right. Well, I know that anybody,
and they're all sex robots.
Have,
they have no personality.
Oh, listen, I know that anybody that might be listening to this, because I'm talking about it from our comic book podcast as well, would expect me to say this and defend their dork fantasies, because. The majority of my audience spends a lot of time masturbating to those pictures and would be very, very, very quick to point out to you that the men are also drawn pretty ridiculously.
Yeah, but the men have personalities and they have, like, you know, some grasp over their own
fate. So you're saying
that
the females in comics right now don't have personalities?
No.
Because I would argue that if we were talking...
fucking Starfire does not have a personality.
Oh, God. She is a fucking real doll. Again, I was actually thinking of that when I said I think that's called lazy writing.
Okay, tell me about Starfire, because I'm not familiar with this character. We're all three comic
book
fans.
You're absolutely familiar with the character. You're not realizing you are. Have you seen any episodes of... Teen Titans show that was on a few years ago?
No, not really.
Okay, well, Starfire is a main character in that. She was a main character in Marv Wolfman and George Perez's seminal run on Teen Titans. She was, for a very long time, a very serious romantic interest of Dick Grayson, of, the first Robin.
Oh, okay.
They were very nearly married at some point. Great character. And then DC did their brand new 52, where they relaunched 52 books, and a lot of them, I think that you can make an argument, are very progressive, are great, treat their women very well. I would say that Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman that he's writing
is
one of the best things that's out there, period. But Scott Lobdell.
But to be fair, I've been reading Wonder Woman, and I'm caught up to the current issue, which right now, at the time of this recording, is issue 4, I believe. Wonder Woman, as a character, has not really been developed. Right now, all that's really going on in the series is Brian Azzarello saying...
Well, no, but you do
have... You're gonna let me write some Greek gods? They're gonna be cold-blooded.
But you do have female characters being developed. You have Hippolyta being developed. Mm-hmm. You have Strife being developed.
Strife is one of those masturbatory characters.
I would argue just... she is, but I would argue just on the basis of those two characters that Brian Azzarello is already writing strong, confident women, and certainly... I mean, they're the focus of the book.
But just not with a lot of depth yet. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not what's going to happen. I'm just playing devil's advocate. I would say a better example in the new 52 is Catwoman.
See, I couldn't get past the first issue. I haven't read anything past the first issue just because there was such a...
Because of the Batman, Catwoman fucking
rape
scene?
At the end, right?
That was not right.
It's whatever. It was, I read that, but...
Diana liked that issue, and so did Violet Blue. a very famous sex blogger.
Yeah, see, I don't have a problem with them being sexy. Or even being sex-crazed. That's fine. But as long as they have a fucking, like, personality, at least a little bit.
I guess. I just, you know, seriously.
Well, I'm going to
one-third of that issue. One-third of that issue was a Batman sex scene.
That's important for Catwoman. Especially coming right on the first issue. Catwoman is one of the reasons I bring up Catwoman at all is because you have her internal dialogue intensely throughout the writing. So you're really deep in her head and deep in her emotions and deep in her motives. And her decision-making process is just, she actually reminds me of Matt Wagner's character Grendel, which is one of my favorite comic book characters of all time. The original Grendel, the Hunter Rose character, who actually was a Batman villain in one crossover. She's very methodical. She's very intense.
Okay, but this is obviously a strong female character, as is the
but well-developed Catwoman.
I think your original question, though, was, you know, a bad example, and yeah. Diana's absolutely right. I mean, obviously, we're bickering back and forth on the merits of current females and how they're being written. I think the further you go back, absolutely, you see it get more and more ridiculous. But comic books, I feel like, especially because comic books have always been written to 12-year-old boys, I feel like that in this genre, in this cross-section you're looking at, sci-fi, horror, and comic books, I think comic books are an easy target for bad examples, especially early on. For me, I would look, but I mean, that's kind of the case across the board. All of these genres are rife with bad examples.
Do you still think comics are written for 12-year-old boys?
No, not at all. No.
Okay, and then they have some stupid bitches in them with big bubble tits.
Bubble tits.
Well, our girl has bubble tits. She has beach ball tits.
Well, what do you think then, Diana, about things like Japanese cartoons
are fucked up, mostly. 95% of that shit is fucked up.
So, Diana's like advocating it. Burning all of your comics, boys.
No, I like it. I love, I think it's Moro. There's a manga artist named Moro, and he does, like, transgressive manga, and it's really fucking cool. Like, he did a storyline. I'll have to find a link for it and post it, because it's awesome. But it's, if Japan had won World War II, and it's all got these weird sexual images, and it's violent and stylized and awesome, and and all of his comics are really twisted. And he has this thing where he loves, to, like, hit women in the eyes with something. Like, in the art, like, there's this one where it's a snake. There's a stick, I think, in one. And it's just the imagery in it is really intense, mindfuck. I recommend it.
Well, then this I think this is a good
those women are mistreated.
Opportunity though for us to bring up another Japanese artist that you're very fond of, and that you make a strong argument that even though the women are intensely victimized in his movies, you believe that he does really right in this issue. What is his name? Takashi Miyake.
I love him. He, all of his movies are horror. Well, not all of his movies are horror movies, actually. He's multi-genred. He's very, very prolific. He's made a shit ton of movies. He does more than one movie a year, typically.
He works according to the film industry there, and I think he grinds out on average between 7 and 10 movies a year.
Holy
That's a true wizard.
Okay, but then he manages to come up with these, like, totally bizarre movies. They're pieces of art. I absolutely love them. They are intense, though. They are transgressive. They have violent scenes. They have disturbing scenes. But the action is always, always driven by a woman in almost every movie. There's exceptions, of course, especially, like, in his less horror movies, those are driven by men because there's just kind of not too many female characters in them. Like the Yakuza movies are about Yakuza
but
dudes.
Let's talk about, for example, give us a synopsis of the movie I watched with you. What was that one called?
Did you watch Imprint with me?
Yeah, the one with the ghosts, the Japanese girls, and the whorehouse. And
yes, that was Imprint.
Okay, give the audience a synopsis about that and some of the fucked up shit about that, why you don't think that's sexist.
Of course, this is, we should reference, this is an episode of Masters of Horror, the Showtime series that... if you're interested, I believe you can watch on Instant Queue.
I think so.
I think that's actually how we watched it. So it's out there on Netflix right now if you want to watch it. Almost everybody has access to a Netflix account.
No, son, we bought that. But yeah, it might be on Netflix.
No, I think it is.
Yeah, but we own it too.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, so this movie is, the cinematography is, like, heartbreakingly beautiful. It all looks like a really saturated dream. It's so pretty. But it's about... this guy basically takes a boat to Whore Island. And he does...
it is this, the lost chapter of Peter Pan.
And he is a creepy-looking dude. He's the creepiest-looking dude you've ever seen in your life. And he takes a boat to this, like, Whore Island looking for this one chick that, like, he met in a field of pinwheels by a mountain. And he loves her because he met her there. I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's a horror movie. But anyway.
He's going to find his true love on Horror Island.
On Horror Island. But what he doesn't know is that it's the island of ghosts. And they're like Japanese style ghosts. Like they're like demons that fuck you up for no reason. And anyway, so he picks out this really sullen whore. Turns out she's deformed. And she's crazy. And he asks about his girlfriend that he was going to marry, the pinwheel girl. And the deformed girl tells her this really heartbreaking story about her basically getting tortured to death. And then he's, like, bummed out. And then she tries to seduce him. And I'm sure I'm leaving some shit out. And then she tries to seduce him, and he, like, I think he turns her down, and that's when she's like, I killed your girlfriend, fuck you.
But the whole time, what she's leaving out is that they're...
it's drunk history,
that they're,
really.
That there are intense scenes of massive, sexually suggestive, intensely grotesque
torture. Oh, yeah, it shows the girl getting tortured, and she pees on herself, and she gets needles in her nails and needles in her teeth.
It's, you know, and it's one of those movies that I'm always surprised by what I don't see. I've probably seen this thing 10 fucking times. And I'm always surprised when I watch it with what I don't see, because you imagine it to be quite a bit more graphic than it is, really, when you're sitting and remembering it, because it's so suggestive. It's so... I mean, don't get me wrong. It's fucking graphic over the top. There, at one point, a fetus spills out.
There's like a few fetuses.
Yeah, there's a lot of commentary on abortion, which could be used as an argument to suggest that the film is feminist. But we can't overlook, like one, the main thing that I would see is, like, from the conversation that I've seen in general in my life as a hardcore pop culture fan about... these issues in comics and in science fiction and stuff, is there's gonna be some fucking sadist weird dude, we know one guy like this in our hometown, that's probably jerking off to that. It's like,
I have a weird boner right now.
Yeah, I would love to go get some 16-year-old girl from the high school and stick needles in her nipples. Yeah.
God. Yeah, that is probably true.
And the fear that, and you know, and that, and you, the kind of the philosophy behind that is that as long as these kind of sexual fantasies are perpetuated in popular culture, that there's going to be some kind of like relationship between that and actual rape.
Have you ever read the Sarah Silverman biography? I think it's called, what is it called? It's something like...
probably Dookie and Farts.
it's something and P. It ends with P. Anyway,
all you have to do is Google Sarah Silverman biography and you have it, surely.
Well, she spends a whole chapter on that exact subject, and I love the way that she talks about it. And she says that she's always afraid that people are going to latch onto the dark parts of the joke, like the, what she calls it, the wrong part of the joke. And she said that she actually didn't name him explicitly, but she did say, "Don't stop believing." So you pretty much know it's Steve Perry. And she said when she met him, he was like, "Oh, this is the chick that tells all the nigger jokes." And she was appalled because obviously he didn't get it at all, and he liked it for all the wrong reasons, and he liked her for the wrong reasons.
I think that's a risk that any artist puts out there.
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing with these movies. Like, yeah, the director might have to take some of that. But I do think that about that dude that made fucking Happiness. That movie's fucked up.
That the guy who made Happiness is really living out some kind of pedophilia.
He's going to hell, dude. Is. That movie's so fucked up.
Happiness is, I guess, a dark comedy.
No, it's not funny. It's just psychological torture. Oh, my God.
It is a very contemporary film, but one of the main characters is a pedophile, and you're watching all these people who are just, like, horrible losers and who are terrible people and watching them struggle through life. And this one of the characters is a pedophile, and Diana, who is usually the one who's freaking me out with the shit that she's into, has had a very intense reaction to this film.
You don't fuck with little kids. Oh my God.
Yet she loves Japanese culture.
Yeah, well, you know.
And if anybody wants to know what I mean,
tonight just, on the show,
just image.google.com.
The little kid on American Horror Story.
Yeah, we're all really into American Horror Story, and this should
Antichrist?
Be discussed.
That's different.
If you're not American Horror Story is a current television series. Is it on FX?
Yes.
If you don't know about it and you're into horror movies, you're really a fucking traitor to your kind, and you need to go watch it now.
Well, it has extreme examples of women being portrayed very strong and very... Women drive this show.
Even though they're
also different.
And even though this show also does a lot of these traditional things that you see in horror movies, like rape, and, I mean, there's a rape or like proto-rape shit going on probably every other episode.
It seems like every other episode, yeah. That may, again, be one of those things where it seems like more than it did, but it seems like there's some variation on rape or
but I can't. I have to say that I don't think that, in my opinion, on this issue, American Horror Story has had a single misstep at all.
No, I think... on any issue.
Even though it will be provocative, but if you're intelligent and you watch the show, the way that the writing is so awesome that...
I think it's hands down one of the best genre pieces that's been out there in years. We talk about it for an episode on Random Bits of Geek. We're huge fans of the show. I think that people that are in any way horror genre fans just really need to be tuned into this. They really need to be keyed into this because this has the potential to reach a broader audience for the geeky things that you like that other people don't.
Right.
I really love Tate. I shouldn't. He's a psychopath.
Tate is like Kurt Cobain, the trench coat mafia, and I don't know, and fucking Jeremy from Pearl Jam all rolled up into one thing.
I don't know why I find it appealing. It's so bad.
No, he was written for that. He was like, if you were a teenager anywhere between the years 1990 and 2010, this character who is the scariest, evilest bastard ever will sexually arouse you if you're female. And I think that's really, like, I think something that I keep wanting to bring up, because it seems to be, like, in the periphery of all this shit, and it's never really discussed, is, you know, the reason I think that artists, you know, do make bubble tits, and that rape and all this shit is always coming up.
Can we just start saying bubble tits in conversation?
All
right. I know you're making a big point, but I think bubble tits should be spread throughout the... common parlance of the day.
Well, is there an evolutionary psychological cause that makes this kind of stuff appealing, especially, I mean, to men, but really to everyone? Like, would
so
you...
So are you saying there's some ape part of our brain that's like, me likey bubble tits.
Bubble tits and probably even sexual aggression on different levels.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So this is just satisfying primitive rape fetish.
Yeah, well, yeah. Would you like, well, on some level that, or even just like on something, because I mean, I don't know, this is the kind of shit that really gets controversial, but I'm just going to spill it out as bluntly as I can so that I don't spend too much time pussyfooting around about it. Like, basically, and it's funny because we had the same conversation during the food episode. We've had written language for like 5,000 years. evolutionarily, Homo sapien has been around for at least 100,000. So that's 95,000 years that we were just running around in the savannah with no cities, no language, just our dicks hanging out in the air. And evolution is going to favor whatever produces the most offspring. Evolution is not a benevolent force. If you're scientifically talking about evolution, it does not always represent improvement.
So you're saying we have an evolutionary drive to play catch 'em and fuck 'em.
Catch 'em and fuck 'em.
That's fantastic.
Yes, and but probably, we have an evolutionary fucking drive to eat our own shit. We have an evolutionary drive to fucking not bathe. I mean, any fucking foul-ass animalistic behavior, you can fucking blame that on. You know, but the fact of the matter is that we are not those apes in the savannah fucking digging in our asses. Well, you know what? Actually, a lot of us are. A lot of us really are, but there's enough of us that aren't constantly digging in our asses to fucking keep things at least reasonably in order for now.
Well, I mean, no, I totally agree with you, but even the way we keep things in order is not by, like, totally, like, burning the bridge with our instincts. But adapting them, like, I know from our friendship that the three of us are all very comfortable with the topics of, like, S&M and all this kind of weird fetish stuff. But isn't that, like, just a healthy outlet for those instincts?
I don't think it's aesthetically fun. I don't know.
But that's why it's aesthetically fun. And, you
no,
know,
it's, I'm an artist.
And you know, and other things that are evolution.
I'm down with catch 'em and fuck 'em.
Well, and catch 'em and
fuck you, man.
And catch 'em and fuck 'em, different versions of it, like, play out in both genders. We know that there's behaviors in human females, according to surveys taken by scientists like David M. Buss, that show that in every culture, like, women have incentives and strategies, and it's probably genetic, to basically, like, cheat and to get pregnant with dudes that are way hotter than their husbands and way cooler than their husbands and then make their husbands pay for the baby. There's also recently at the University of North Texas, there's a social psychologist beginning to do research on sexual aggression in women. What happens is when a man is sexually aggressive, he's very likely to jump on you, hold you down, and try to stick his dick in your body. When a woman is sexually aggressive, she's very likely to destroy your reputation, to control everyone around you.
Women are way cooler.
Yeah, I mean, it also makes these things kind of harder to measure, but I think there's probably, I mean, even when, like, talking about women being sexually aggressive, why is Wonder Woman hot? Why is Catwoman hot? These bitches are hot because they might make you kiss their high heel.
Is that why you like them?
That's why I like Kara Thrace.
Hell yeah.
I like Kara Thrace.
That's a great example.
I think she's going to whip my ass. Well, that's why I like you.
Aww.
That's very much why I like you. Is because I think at any moment you may whip my ass.
Not me. I'm a little lamb.
And the Sun Tzu teaches us that the art of war is deception.
I think it's time for another jam.
Okay, let's play. We're going to play another Velvet Underground cover, and I will tell you which one after you heard it.
Means it's not.
The whole world's coming to an end, Mal.
I see angels, Mickey. They're coming down for us from heaven. And I see you riding a big red horse. You're driving the horses, whipping them, and they're spitting and frothing all on them out, and they're coming right at us. And I see the future. There's no death, because you and I were angels.
I love you, man.
I know you do, baby. I've loved you since the day we met.
Anyone has ever had a heart wouldn't turn around and break it. And anyone has ever played a part wouldn't turn around and hate it. Sweet Jane. Sweet, sweet Jane.
So since the first part of the podcast, we've farted around and partied for about a week, and I've been trying to draw some comic books.
This is the longest song ever. It was all in the space of that Cowboy Junkies cover.
Drawing comic books is my other passion in life, and Diana was hating on the way I draw tits.
You drew saggy tits.
I drew...
Not like once, but with every drawing
in your book. They were all saggy tits.
She did this. Every single one of them. She didn't like a single breast you had.
Well, we're going to have to find some drawings of my tits and let the audience pipe in, but at least it started
there
up...
There were some individual tits that were okay.
Just like one.
I liked the whole body of tits.
Not even a pair, just one
tit at a time.
I've been
reading comic books for a while.
The Wizard
I liked the whole
Prison
body of
tits were really good.
Well, the Wizard Prison tits that Diana's talking about is from a story that I drew while I was on LSD, so...
And you drew the tits good.
They were like creatures that were made entirely of tits and things like that. But... that brought up some interesting conversation about the way that women are, like, visually portrayed in science fiction, horror, and comic books. And Diana was pointing... We were looking through some comics, through some recent comics that Reverend Grimes had, and she was just critiquing left and right that these drawings were not good.
There's this weird need, and they do it in the dudes, too, I get that, but in the chicks, it's like, I don't know, it's weird... That they elongate the torsos really unnaturally, and they're, like, way too thin. Like you could not possibly be that thin.
Well, I know that we have rules of proportion in comics. Like, there's the, like, you measure the body by the lengths of heads. So you could actually, like, do that, like, check what that proportional ratio is, which I can do, and we could talk about it in a future episode, and we could just look at some pages and count if they're making them too many heads tall. Or you could make an argument that there is a disproportionate... Anyways, that's super dorky. I feel like I just went off on a tirade of nothing.
Like, you can check the link below for how to draw comics the Marvel way. It'll teach you all about the head height system.
Yeah, there's a head height system. I believe women are 5 heads tall, men are 6 heads tall.
I just wanted to see if you'd talk about it more.
No, don't do it!
You're like one of those scientists that wants to count the kernels on the corn cob.
Oh,
you
know? No. Well, I do. Well, that's really all science is.
It's counting the kernels on the corn cob.
To a certain extent.
A little tedious.
What? So how about, like, the way, like, the women are visualized in horror movies, science fiction, and even comic book films? Like, what did you, I know you've seen a bunch of, what about X-Men? We just went and recently saw, well, I guess that's too limiting, because we're not talking about the way they look. Talk about Michelle Pfeiffer, Catwoman, talk about, like, Spider-Man's girlfriend, talk about, do we have, what are the female superheroes we got running around right now? Do we have any superhero females in film right now besides these
Catwoman? No, not really. I mean, there was
Storm. I don't like Storm at all. Like, the movie Storm. I think she's very matronly and frumpy. Like, which, you know, I guess because Halle Berry's not the youngest actress they have. It's like, I don't know. I didn't like it. That's the vibe I got off
of. So you want the Mohawk Storm.
Yeah, I like the Mohawk Storm.
Leather vest.
I don't want the one that's looking
choice.
After the other younger chicks or whatever. Well, I get that she's been around longer.
Well, that'll probably eventually happen as they keep making... But I guess it's what I was really going for is just, like, the image. Like, how are these women portrayed? In general, Rogue was a main character. We could think about Rogue. They're not as sexualized in those X-Men movies that recently came out.
No, they're not. It's not nearly as bad. And, you know, and it's...
I grew up with pictures of Rogue in the comics.
The X-Men...
That if I didn't jerk off to them, I certainly planned on it.
It's important to point out at this point that the X-Men, when we were younger, had a series. I don't know if it was something they did every year or they just did every so often.
Yeah,
but
like
they used to do
issue.
A swimsuit issue.
But this hot Rogue shit, that was from, like, a whole story arc. They had a whole story arc where the X-Men... went and crash-landed in Antarctica, and in the Marvel Universe, Antarctica has a dinosaur superland in it. And what is the guy's name? Kazar?
Kazar.
Well, the mutants have relations with Kazar, because the mutants have to have all kinds of weird diplomatic ties. So Rogue was just running around in the Savage Land in some Daisy Dukes, Like, the most intense-ass Daisy Dukes. Like, way more intense than Daisy Dukes. Daisy, like, some Alexis Texas porno movie Daisy Dukes. And just for issue after issue, it was like Rogue fighting dinosaurs and some Daisy Dukes. Can you imagine what my mind must have been like at that part of my life?
Explains a lot of your artwork. Now, you kind of threw me for that question, because, like, I don't pay attention when I'm watching the movies what the chicks look like, because usually I find the chicks kind of boring and two-dimensional.
Game of Thrones, even though it's fantasy...
The costuming in that is beautiful. Use your words. The costuming in that show is really beautiful, and
But Daenerys is super sexy. Like she's naked on the first episode.
That is, by the way, obviously, judging from your artwork, your idea of what a sexy outfit for a woman is just that she's naked all the time. That's obviously your preference.
I enjoy that series, and the women turn out to be pretty strong characters.
And I have the hots for Cersei too, even though I don't think we've gotten to. Oh, we did get to see her get tagged from behind. What did you?
By her brother, right before he
throws a 10-year-old off a tower. It's a great series.
Everyone should watch it.
Well, okay, an example of. Example of strong women in genre fiction. You only have to let your brother tag you from behind. But other than that,
I think that what I'm mostly trying to point out is that the Daenerys character in that series shows that a woman can be highly sexualized, which is what the male readers in comics, like when somebody draws and writes Rogue wearing Daisy Dukes for like 6 issues in the Savage Land, you know, cooching it up while she battles the dinosaurs. There's obviously a market for that. There's an impulse.
Yeah, but that renders her with like no agency. That's she's fucking totally Rogue. A prop. It's really. Lame.
I doubt it. If Rogue was never written as a weak character.
No, she was.
If Rogue was actually weakened down quite a bit
the
for the
leader for a while.
Oh yeah, and she was bad. Like at first, she was like,
"Oh yeah,
mutant supremacy, you fucking weakling."
Yeah, she came on as a supervillain.
Yeah, but when you Miss
Marvel
like that,
was with the Avengers mm-hmm. when she came on.
Sexualizing somebody for no purpose in the story.
Well,
no,
they did it for the purpose of selling books.
Well, I mean that's
doesn't like speak to the. There's no narrative but
there's
reason
a,
for it.
Well, so. But there's a tradition. Well, maybe I don't know. Why is that so? Why would you say there's no narrative reason? I think sexualizing...
You would not fight dinosaurs and Daisy Dukes that were up your vagina.
I didn't know that.
You thought that it would be a reasonable outfit choice for those type of survival
conditions? I could tell you that dudes in the Polynesian islands fight wars with dick sheaths on.
There's probably bugs and shit with the dinosaurs. Her legs are gonna get eaten up. She's gonna get chiggers.
She's fucking Rogue. If they bite her, she's gonna drain their life force. They'll die.
She'll turn into a chigger.
No, she doesn't turn into everything automatically. It only happens when she attacks super beings like Mojo or Galactus that she gets overloaded and transforms into them.
Okay, kid, I love that you put. I love that you put Mojo and Galactus in the same category there. Because what is Galactus?
Mojo runs his own universe. What more do you want?
Oh, God. He's a fat fucking Jabba the Hutt ripoff that's...
Like a million times more powerful than Jabba the Hutt?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Really? You're going to throw the ex-babies at these people to fight? That's your bad guy? That's your grand... And Longshot?
I fucking Longshot, love
Longshot. Your secret weapon? Yeah, fuck you, man. Longshot's a fucking joke of a character. Your superpower is that you have good luck. That's it.
Yeah. Well, you
I
know,
would take that superpower.
but it's not very visually interesting. It's
the
really
way
not.
I mean, the way it works out for Longshot is always pretty good. Isn't that Shatterstar's power too?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Aren't they from the same fucked up universe or whatever? They're both from the Mojoverse.
Yeah, and
The Mojo Verse.
Longshot had the relationship with Dazzler.
Are we getting oddly specific?
I'm sorry.
I think that's entirely
I think you guys
possible.
Are going on a hardcore nerd tangent.
I'm sorry.
I forgive you.
Okay.
Women.
Okay, now...
Not Longshot.
I keep thinking about...
She's kind of a girl.
I keep thinking about the Pulp Fiction-y, like science fiction book art, too. Like, Frazetta. We're both big fans of Frazetta. You should make
a
commentary on Frazetta.
I like the... I don't know. I find the women really appealing. Like, they're really muscular, but they're also a little bit fat. And they have big boobs and, like, wild, crazy hair. And they're, like, running around with saber-toothed tigers. I don't know. I like them.
Do you think they're hoes?
No, not at all.
Then why do you think Rogue is a hoe when she was fighting the dinosaur?
Well, because all the Frank Franzetta girls are, like, queens. And
no. And they always get kidnapped, like, in those books.
Well, that's true. They do get kidnapped.
It's like, oh, whoops, the barbarian.
I don't know. I didn't read the stories. I just looked at the art. That's how the art spoke to me.
Frazetta was probably a guy that was real nice to ladies all the time. Is he still alive?
I don't think so, but...
I watch, like, documentaries about him and shit. I'm a total fucking fanboy for Frazetta.
And I love the way he draws dragons, too. They have cute faces.
I wish you knew about Mila Manera. That's the one person that should definitely be talked about on this episode. Do you know about Mila Manera?
I have no idea who
Educate us real quick.
He's, like... He draws for Alejandro Jodorowsky. He's one of Alejandro Jodorowsky's comic book artists, so that right there should get him some fucking props as a brilliant artist. And he draws porn, mostly. That's, like, his main thing. Just straight up. And he draws women to look so beautiful. His art, like, it's always, like, juxtaposed, like, has things about his art.
Mm.
Like, his art is considered highly respected, but it's like Caligula. It's super intense. the comic book that he drew for Jodorowsky is an erotic comic about the Borgias that came out way before the Showtime series, and it's all like Pope orgies all the time with Alejandro Jodorowsky. That's a real comic.
Is that hard to get a hold of?
No, they have it on Amazon. I'm totally buying it. We should do a whole episode on it. But I bring him up, and this is like, you know, we've already kind of talked about how, like, my comic book work is really sexually suggestive, and I'm sure I'll be trying to peddle it on the podcast before long. But this is, like, one of the things I'm into is, like, I consider myself a feminist, and I write science fiction, and I draw comic books, and I'm a huge horror movie fan, and I want to see women be very, very sexy. I want dudes to be sexy, too. I think that everything needs to increase its sexual output.
All things.
All things in the universe.
All things was fun.
And I think that makes a lot of times the story more interesting and more revealing for the reader. Not just, like, pornographic in the sense that it turns them on, but, you know, when you're sexually aroused, a lot of people don't do a lot of soul-searching about that part of themselves. And it's probably, like, I'm kind of a weird Freudian, I guess, a little bit, in that I think that that part of us is probably driving everything else.
Hmm. And so you want to amplify that through your weirdness?
Yeah, I think that we would definitely be more artistic as a species if everybody was more turned on.
Well, we were turned on all the time when we were fucking chimpanzees and we ate each other's flesh and threw shit.
And invented language and civilization.
No, we were chimps.
Well, you know, there was
further
a...
on.
Started
I guess
somewhere.
We were never
started,
chimps.
So you're saying that sexual charge, that energy, gave birth to the human species, basically.
Well, that's
so we need to recapture it so we can give birth to the next...
Yeah, the super species.
There you go.
So you think more sex will help us invent stuff?
Not necessarily more sex. More sexual energy, more sexual awareness, more sexual freedom. Because, like, more bad sex, that would just create more children that suck.
If you know somebody who sucks, the reason why is because they were the result of
bad sex. Well, people have a lot of unhealthy
sex. God, their parents must never have enjoyed that.
people have a lot of unhealthy sexual habits, and I mean, that's even kind of been in the background of all of our conversation about this feminist stuff in pop culture. You know, people, it's not, it goes beyond, you know, with the stuff that people are really concerned about, like pedophilia and rape, and it goes right down to the fact that people, like, are sexually disconnected, that people, like, overly fetishized to where they don't know what to do, that people have no real sexual education and are often undeveloped. I think as a species, like, we have a whole channel for food. And yeah. Eating is not nearly as cool as sex.
And it is food porn.
We have lots of channels for sex, though.
No, but they're not, like, quality. They should put me in charge of the motherfuckers.
Well, yeah, and it's not like... well, you know, that's the tricky thing about porn, you know, is that...
Porn could be educational. Porn could be artistic. Porn could be open your third eye.
It's almost never is. You know what I mean? It's almost never artistic.
I don't know. I've been reading that Violet Blue blog. And they
make... Well, you're talking about a really, like, specific, like, that's their fetish. You know what I mean? But there's a lot.
But Violet Blue has been on Oprah to talk about porn. The reason we don't know about the Violet Blue porn is because it's not on the internet for free. You just have to buy it. Because these people are like, hello, I'm an art house porno director in the realm of fairy in San Francisco. I hired only Oscar-performing pornographers in my film. You have to buy their fucking DVD, and people are lazy about that, and they go on, you know, YouPorn or fucking RedTube or whatever, and they jerk off for, like, everything's from 0 to 30 seconds, total bliss. Only my argument is that's not total bliss. That people should, like, they should get way more into their porn. They should get picky about their porn. They should get analytical about their porn.
Well, then you should just read porn.
Well, that's what I've been doing, but there's other options.
So you want that in your sci-fi and in your comic books?
Not necessarily. I mean, I don't think sex is the only story out there. But I think
you want it injected healthily into
all of
these
things.
Things.
It's already being injected. I mean, we wouldn't have had so much topic for banter if that weren't true.
Yeah, it's like put in there in like a really immature way.
To tie it into a specific genre
thing. In a very
30-second
kind of way.
A part of the movement to do this, you could make the case that that's what Battlestar Galactica did.
Yeah?
That's the big change. That's the big thing they did. Was they said, okay, here's this goofy sci-fi fucking, you know, ships flying around, they're gonna fight evil robots, but, hey, let's make it about sex.
That was an intensely revealing show. That show is deep philosophy. I wish I could think of other examples. Star Trek, we talked about Star Trek, I guess, hopefully at the beginning of the episode, I can't remember, but, like, how, like, women are portrayed kind of lame in the original Star Trek, but it was... still pioneering. Counselor Troy, I probably bitched a lot about Counselor Troy, but Counselor Troy was also a totally sexually liberated, independent, high-ranking Federation officer. And in one episode, she's even preparing for the fucking, like, test to become the captain of a ship, basically. And she's showing what
a
ninja
she
is.
She takes her commander's test, yep. Or whatever.
So even like it's there's always
and she is the one that got to crash the Enterprise in the movies when they finally killed that ship to make the new one. It was her.
I have a Betazoid fetish.
There you go with your weird over fetishized 30 seconds.
No.
Now you have a deep sensual relationship with that
30
character.
Minutes.
30
minutes. I got 30 minutes for Counselor Troy and 30 hours for her whole planet.
Well, see, I think a lot of women are totally, like, for that. Like, they would like there to be more.
But I'm saying that she's not, fetishized, that it's really deep, and Galactica was, too.
Do you have something for the Vulcans?
Oh, I know everything about Vulcan sexuality.
Do you have something for the Romulans?
I believe we are Romulan, so it's not really a fetish.
Do you have something for the Borg?
Oh, no, not. But I believe Diana does.
Well, I guess my point is, and I'm surprised with the board.
There's cyberpunk.
I would have thought that you just want to sleep with all the aliens.
Mostly so. The Vulcans. Most of all the Vulcans.
Is it because they're like elves, kind of?
Well, so are the Romulans, which is the species we belong to. So it's not really a fetish, because it's just yourself.
Us three specifically?
All three of us I have identified as full-blooded Romulans.
Do we know any Ferengis?
Oh, we probably know a lot. We need to know more of them. We quit being so fucking broke!
Tell us the rule of Ferengi.
Do we know
acquisition.
Any Betazoids?
No.
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 No, that's too perfect for you.
No, a Betazoid would be someone who is, like, totally empathic. Just always like, oh, I'm totally reading your mind. It's making me feel better. We don't know anybody like that.
Do we
that.
Know Andorians?
Yeah, we have, like, three Andorians.
So we have mostly Romulans.
No, well, no, it's just the three of us are Romulan, but there's not that many of us. There's only, like, two other Romulans.
Klingons,
well,
what's I guess.
The majority?
There's only two Klingons, and one of them may
like,
have been
I
a pity,
one
a pity Klingon kicked down. I can't say his name. The cab driving pirate. It's a Klingon.
Well, yeah, that was the obvious one.
I've been giving Star Trek races to all of our friends.
Do we have any Borg friends?
Nick Simmons has.
I'm glad
claimed
that you're going with that name thing.
Oh, I'm
you
so just, sorry.
You're gonna have to go back and bleep all your names.
Can
no,
we,
we're
can
not
we
going
go
back.
Ahead and just.
No, his name is Nicky Nine Toes. This is our friend who's diabetic.
Maybe
and
you want to give everybody his phone number.
And he's had like three organ replacements, and he has this giant like medical device like cybernetically implanted in his arm. And it looks like a tumor. When I was assigning Star Trek races, he on Facebook, he just pipes in. It's like, I'm the Borg, bitch, basically. I was like, yeah, there's no argument there. So we do have one Borg.
What was Whoopi Goldberg? What kind of alien was she?
Oh, Jesus, you're going to make me commit seppuku. I can't believe
there's only like 10 of them.
Yeah, no, there's some beautiful, amazing species of mechanical elves that live for like 400 years, and they hang out with all the starship captains because they're like, I'm just a beautiful spiritual traveler through the cosmos. Didn't Wesley Crusher like become one of them?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
something?
He became a traveler. He became a traveler.
No, but
like
she's not a traveler. That's a
no,
different
no,
species.
No, she's something else entirely.
But they're very mystical.
She's something that the Borg wiped out. Why does anybody need to know this? Nobody needs to know this at all.
Well, Whoopi, I always had the vibe.
Why do I know this? I feel kind of angry and upset with myself right now.
I always felt like there was a suggested sexual history between Whoopi Goldberg character and
Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, and I always thought that was hot, like in some really strange way that I can't justify.
It's good that you wanted to see Jean-Luc get laid.
Yeah, no, I knew he was getting laid left and right.
Dr. Crusher. He was getting laid by Dr. Crusher.
Oh my god! My wife just ran in with a mask she's been making and scared the shit out of me.
That was the perfect moment. I want to shorten just that bit right there and play it again and again and again.
Hey, right, with that being said, we're going to play a Lou Reed cover by our friend Sir Morrissey of God.
Sir Morrissey of God coming up with a Lou Reed cover.
And then we'll close the episode.
Skies. satellites of love, satellites of love, satellites of love, satellites of love. Satellites gone, went to Mars. Soon it will be filled with parking cars. I watched it for a little while. I cannot stand the TV. Satellite of love. I've been told you've been happy with Harry, Mark and John. Monday, Tuesday, any day but Thursday with Harry, Mark and John. Satellites gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. For a little while, I cannot stand George Alagaya. Satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of love, oh, satellite of love.
Facebook friend, Redditor Supreme, thank you for joining us again for this wonderful conversation and sharing your brain space with us.
If you've made it through this far, I should at least put in a little plug to check out the Random Bits of Geek podcast that my friend Bear Zombies and I do.
It is amazing. Mm-hmm. Oh, come on, Diana Parks. You gotta say a better goodbye than that.
Bye-bye.
That's it. That's awesome.
Little buddies.